Tragedy in Barrie tonight. A Vermont social worker is dead after being shot as she left work. Commodore has just returned back from the scene. He is live in our newsroom tonight with the very latest. Kyle?
Well, that's right, Keith. Police say a judge ordered the alleged shooter to give up custody of her child after a series of welfare issues. They say that's what led to this afternoon's fatal attack.
Long after two fatal shots rang out outside Barrie's City Place Friday afternoon, social worker Lara Sobel's shoe and the rifle Jody Herring allegedly shot her with remained on scene. Barrie Police Chief Tim Bombardier says Herring fired the shots at close range. Witnesses stopped her from fleeing or firing more.
She was apprehended by people outside and people inside the building that saw what was going on. My understanding was that they tackled her.
The crime scene in the heart of downtown Barrie drew crowds of onlookers as day turned to night and the investigation continued. Investigators say the alleged shooter is well known to police and has had multiple child welfare issues. A judge ordered the removal of her 9-year-old child in July. Police say they believe that led her to shoot Sobel Friday.
This is obviously a heartbreaking tragedy. I think that it is inconceivable that an event like this could happen here.
Department for Children and Families Commissioner Ken Schatz called Sobel an experienced worker. He says grief counselors are being made available to his staff.
We'll do the best we can to support each other.
The state will assess security at all its state offices following the shooting. Police say they have plenty of evidence, but will stay on scene until the job is done.
We're still going to cross our T's, dot our I's. Detectives are going to work through the night doing interviews.
Herring will face charges in a Barrie courtroom Monday. Police say there's no indication she acted with anyone else. The governor is out of state on vacation at this point in time. In a statement, he called the incident a tragedy and characterized DCF's work as dealing with the most challenging family situations that one can imagine. Acting Governor Lieutenant Governor Phil Scott coordinated with the governor's office tonight to respond to the shooting. Keith.
Just heartbreaking. Commodore live in our newsroom tonight. Thanks so much.
Hi, everyone. This is Carlos Morales. Remember, you can find everything at libertarian-atheist.com, along with thinkaboutnow.com, a new multimedia website and news site. Now, today it's actually going to be just me talking here, and it has to do with a recent case regarding Child Protective Services. Ever since I came out against CPS and wrote my book, Legally Kidnapped, The Case Against Child Protective Services, found at legallykidnapped.net, I like to kind of go over some news stories in regards to CPS to kind of bring some context and clarity to the subject when many people are following these news cycles where you have reporters who have no idea what the hell they're talking about, have never worked for CPS, claiming that they have this information that is just not true. Well, it's important to occasionally get some clarity. Now, the article I'm going to be reading from here is going to be published soon for the Center for Stateless Society, found at c4ss.org. It's titled, Is It Ethical for a Parent to Kill a Child Protective Services Investigator? The article begins with a very important quote by Derek Jensen. Civilization is based on a clearly defined and widely accepted, yet often unarticulated hierarchy. Violence done by those in power under the hierarchy to those lower is nearly always invisible. That is, unnoticed. When it is noticed, it is fully rationalized. Violence done by those lower on the hierarchy to those higher is unthinkable. And when it does occur, it is regarded with shock, horror, and the fetishization of the victims. A little over 2 months ago, a tragic event occurred when a mother murdered a Child Protective Services investigator. It was not just tragic for the person murdered, for every time a human dies, a library is lost. It was not just tragic for the parent, who in desperation found that killing someone was the only way out. It was not just tragic for the child, who is stuck in a violent foster care system and now must live, knowing that they will never have a chance to be reunited with their parent. It's also tragic that the system we live in inevitably leads to such barbaric actions. Jody Herring's 9-year-old daughter was taken from her by Vermont's Department of Children and Families, their version of CPS. Vermont's family court system has been a perpetual hellhole for parents for decades. Recently, a new change was enacted by the Vermont DCF policy to tighten up the system even more. This occurred after two kids died under DCF care. Regarding the changes, the DCF commissioner put it, "Our goal is not reunification." Laura Solbo was the lead investigator in Jody Herring's case, and she received two bullet holes as a result. Jody not only shot Laura, but also three of Herring's relatives who were accused of repeatedly reporting Jody to DCF. There's little information available about the DCF case, and as a result, I will not make any judgment on Laura's parenting skills. Rather, I want to discuss the ethics and emotions behind such actions. I am not a parent, and I have no idea how painful it is to lose a child. I can hear their stories, I can be part of a system that causes it or prevents it, but I will never know the sorrow that parent has. In the family court system, that sorrow is being exacerbated due to the unknowable restrictions that they place on parents using the threat of force. Today, a family will be destroyed because an investigator found out a parent used marijuana. Tomorrow, another family will be destroyed because a child played outside. Time and time again, the system is destroying life after life. When I first heard of this incident, I was inundated with emails asking me if the parent was in the right. Within my ethical paradigm, similar to most libertarians, I view the non-aggression principle as the only consistent ethical position that everyone can follow. Simply put, the non-aggression principle proves that it is unethical for any individual to use force on another human being or their property. If we lived in a just world, free from coercive organizations like the state, an intruder coming into a parent's life and removing their child and placing them in danger is a violation of the non-aggression principle. As a result, the mother would be in the right for using any means to stop the intruder. We don't live in a just world, though. We have cops, we have soldiers, we have bureaucrats, and more paid through theft. There are hundreds of thousands of people in prison for victimless crimes. Children are placed in foster homes when a parent did nothing wrong. We live in the biggest empire in the world. In a state of confinement, ethics move from black and white and into a gray zone. I'm not making the case that there is never a correct time to use force against the state. When a cop holds a gun to your head and tells you he's going to kill you, it would be impossible for me to say it's wrong to defend yourself. In the society we presently live in, actions become judged from a consequentialist perspective rather than an ethical one. Laura's actions will not lead to a unification with her child. It will lead to her being placed in a cage where a child's life continues to be destroyed. No doubt her child will likely blame herself for the actions of her mother, which is common in cases of parental domestic violence. It will not lead to fewer removals of children in the future. Instead, it will solidify the violent nature of parents in the mind of the media and the state. If Laura wanted her and her child's life to be worse, then killing the investigator was the best thing she could have done. This is not a moralistic judgment. It's a simple fact. Tragedies like this will continue while Child Protective Services exists. The only reason this hit the news was that the person attacked was higher within the social hierarchy. If it was simply another child being drugged by a foster home, another parent's life destroyed due to misallegations, or a father killing himself after his parental rights were terminated, there wouldn't have been a single news story about it. All of those events fall within the status quo we live in. The horrendous actions done by the state are rationalized, and when non-state actors use violence, society landmass them. Killing investigators and cops will not end the government's use of force. Every violent revolution has led to another violent government. What carries the state forward is a belief that human beings are innately evil and weak, and that there are superhumans, either powered by God or democracy, that can cure us of our evil ways through force. 262 million people who have been killed by their government over the last 100 years could attest that the belief is flawed. Democide, the murder of people by their own government, has led to 6 times more deaths than who died in combat in all the foreign and internal wars over the last century. Simply put, there is no more dangerous religion than government, and its continued faithful backing will lead to more deaths of its proponents and opponents. This does not have to continue, but there doesn't seem to be an end in sight. Until that day comes, the ethical implications of violence against our captors will lie in a consequentialist zone that's nearly impossible to decipher. Sadly, this is the nature of the relationship between government and man. Again, you'll be able to find this article soon on C4SS.org, along with thinkaboutnow.com. And of course, you can find my book, Legally Kidnapped, The Case Against Child Protective Services, at legallykidnapped.net. Thank you very much. I'm sure we'll be having Megan and Calvin on soon enough to do another episode of the Libertarian Atheist Podcast. Bye-bye, everyone.
Your soul is a fire. Your soul is a fire.